Hare Krishna. We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 15, titled The Pandavas Retire Timely, as text number 51.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Yashradhayaita Bhagavat Priyanam. Pandho Sutanam Iti Samprayanam. Shrinotyalam Svastyayanam Pavitram. Labdhva haro bhakti mupaiti siddhim.
Yaha, anyone who shraddhaya, with devotion, etat, this, Bhagavat Priyana, of those who are very dear to the personality of Godhead. Pandoho, of Pandu. Sutana, of the sons. Iti, thus, Samprayanam, departure for the ultimate goal. Shrunoti, hears. Alam, only. Sastyayanam, good fortune. Pavitram, perfectly pure. Labdhva, by obtaining. Harav, unto the Supreme Lord. Bhaktim, devotional service. Upaiti, gains. Siddhim, perfection. Translation: the subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotion, devotional faith, certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. It's the purport by Srila Prabhupada. It's a very short purport, and this is the end of this chapter too. Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like the Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees is absolute in itself, and thus to hear it with a devotional attitude is to associate with the Lord and constant companions of the Lord. By the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can attain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead, without failing. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, titled The Pandavas Retire Timely.
Om Jnana Timiranthasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajadam Sahaganarukunadhanyutam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahaganalalita Shri Vishadhanyutamscha हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्णा, दिस इज द एंड ऑफ द चैप्टर एंड दिस verse is very significant, and even though the purport is very short, gives very wonderful understanding about our philosophy. So Srila Prabhupada is very expert in presenting the philosophy, which is very complicated, in a very simple and understandable manner. So in Bhagavad Gita, in the third chapter, in one of the beginning verses, the third verses, Krishna says that Lokosmin Vividha Vidya Pura Prokta Mayanaka Jnana Yogena Sankhyana Karma Yogena Yogina. So Krishna says to Arjun, who was confused, even after presenting first two chapters of Bhagavad Gita, initially giving the, we see the setting the scene of Bhagavad Gita, and then second chapter giving the whole summary of Bhagavad Gita, so still Arjun get confused. So he asks, what is this two-sided approach to spirituality? Two-sided approach to self-realization. That is, on one side, Krishna says, Arjuna can practice Buddhi Yoga, which apparently looks like just cessation of all activities, and just use the intelligence, a kind of jnani mentality. And on the other side, Krishna says, okay, you get up and fight. So when Arjun hears the both sides, he thinks, okay, what should I actually do? Now, Krishna answers this question saying, okay, there are two paths of self-realization. One path is the path of jnana, which is, in one sense, cessation of work. That is, this is philosophical speculation. And on the other side, there is devotional service, which is an active process. So he presents these two aspects. Now, in that same purport, Srila Prabhupada makes a very wonderful point. He says, and we know that statement, that is, religion without philosophy is sentiments. And on the same token, philosophy without religious practice, that is just mental speculation. So, just this one sentence of Srila Prabhupada makes a lot of sense, and it helps us to see the world from this view. That is, how we can see there are so many practices without sufficient philosophical backing. And on the other hand, there are so much of philosophy without any practice at all. So we can, you know, see this world, we can see the philosophies in this world, In the same mission, we can see how we can actually classify how they are not bona fide and how they cannot really give us any tangible result. So recently, maybe just a few months back, I was in the university and I had a chat with the president of the Buddhist club. So he was, he was Indian born. He was completely into Buddhism. So he said he liked Dalai Lama. That's what he said, and he reads all his books. And he's studying neuroscience in the university. And he said, actually speaking, I don't want to practice Buddhism. Mm-hmm. This is the president of the Buddhist club, and he's trying to get so many people in. And he said, actually, I don't really believe in the practice as such. But as a theory, it is very wonderful. And he gave a comparison. He said, say for instance, let's take quantum mechanics. It's a theory, because the truth, whatever they are trying to find, truth is always different from the theory. So I'll give you an example. Say if you want to analyze this world, materially speaking, completely materially. So the scientific approach is that there is no direct access to the reality, even the material reality of this world. There is no direct access. Even if we want to, we don't have any direct access. So the access is through the imperfect senses and the speculative mind. All are imperfect anyway. Now, the scientific approach is such that suppose if there is something which one wants to study, one approach is such that create a model of the reality and then study the model. And how well this model, most of the time this model could be mathematical. So we have this mathematical model and we have the actual reality of anything, any material phenomenon. And there is this mathematical reality, and then we are trying to fit this mathematical object into the reality. And try to, if you measure the material phenomenon, means measuring the parameters of this mathematical object, of this construct. So that's the most of the phenomenon are studied in this process. So there's no access. So now he was mentioning, look, let's take the example of quantum mechanics. Okay, there is quantum mechanics to understand some kind of reality on a very subatomic level. All right, that's fine. In the same way, we have this Buddhist theory. We can see the world in terms of this Buddhist theory, and it is very interesting to think about. So he was presenting basically that I am an armchair philosopher, as the Prabhu was termed, armchair philosopher. Yes, I am an armchair philosopher, and I have no real interest in the problems of this world. See, that's what he was telling. And I would like to speculate. And he was actually, their club was quite successful. They said they don't have anything. They have frequent lectures by different Buddhist monks. And they said, I asked, you know, because we were just into the uni, you know, maybe a few semesters. So they were running for some time. So how many people do we get? They said, you know, sometimes law means 20, 25 people, but otherwise we get about 70, 80 people. So, yeah, I was thinking, and people want to know about this kind of speculation. And people do go for this such stuff. So, many times, monk means people have the conception that, okay, the Buddhist monk, that's the most, kind of most famous. And just side point, why they're most famous? Because they don't give the real path. They don't talk about surrender unto the Supreme Lord. They don't speak about God as such. So, in fact, there's another experience with Buddhists. I was in Gopal's. I was having my prasadam one day, and I saw quite a few people in a, you know, very well dressed, you know, like going for a conference. And among them there was a Buddhist monk also. So I asked those who were serving there, who are they? So they said, that time there was an atheist conference going on, worldwide atheist conference going on in Melbourne. So they said, oh, they were all from the atheist conference. So the Buddhists, they identify themselves as atheist. And they came, in fact, the whole group came to Gopal's and they had prasadam. So, they want to be atheists, but, you know, prasadam mercy is going through, it is cutting through. So, that's the mercy of the Lord, mercy of Lord Chaitanya and Prabhupada. We can see how everything is working. So, this is armchair philosophy without any practice. And on the other token, there are a lot of practices without any philosophy. Or without any sufficient understanding of the philosophy. So sometimes there could be any philosophy behind, but those who are practicing has no clue about it whatsoever. Especially we can see in India, where Srila Prabhupada says the Vedic culture is dead, but even the dead elephant is of some use. The people have some kind of proclivity, inclination towards that, which could be utilized in the right way. So many times, you know, I go to India, I have been there, you know, so I'm from there, so of course I go there. You know, so we had to perform some rituals, and whatsoever, we don't know what we are doing. You know, my auntie passed away maybe 2 years back now. When there, I had to do the whole rituals because she didn't have any son, so I was doing the whole thing. And this ritualistic brahmanas, marthas, they are so expert in the mantras and the tantras and the, you know, the whole thing. You know, it is just mantras coming one after another. And all the direction, you know, the kushagras, you know, lying in this direction, I asked me to do in the left, right, you know, the whole thing, you know. And they really don't know what's actually going on. The real purpose behind, they don't know really. They have a vague idea, but not a very clear cut understanding of the whole thing. So people lose faith in such kind of rituals without a proper philosophical understanding. So I met a boy recently, I was speaking to him. 2 weeks back, or 1 week back, in fact, and I was in touch with him for some time. He's from India, and he's a caste Brahmin family. And he said, actually, when we talk, he's a distant relative of mine. He said he lost complete interest in the whole thing. He said, I have some interest in spirituality as such, but if it comes to the deity of the Lord, he said, I have no more interest in those kind of things. I have no interest in the rituals as such, and in the temple worship, I have no interest anymore. So he said, yes, I understand that there is this philosophy, or there is this Vedanta philosophy, there is this Vedic philosophy, but when it comes to rituals, it is just for those who cannot really understand the philosophy. So the rituals, the worship, it is just for those who cannot really understand the meaning behind it. So I have actually given up that. He said, our family tradition, we are actually the pujaris of such and such temples. But I don't want to do anything. Then I had a chat, other night. I was sitting with him for 1 hour and speaking to him. I explained what is actually meant by deity worship. What is the philosophy behind deity worship? How rituals are not just doing something, but there is a correspondence between the philosophy and practice. And there has to be one-to-one correspondence between philosophy and practice. It is not just one without the other. Or it's just one is just superior. No, both are required. That is the teaching of Srila Prabhupada. And that is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. We can see both sides. So, it is very important for us to understand the two sides. That is, when it comes to philosophy, how we have to apply it in our life. Otherwise, even for us, the armchair philosophy is very well applicable for devotees also. We can also get into the theoretical speculation, or just speculation, or just quoting theories without any practice. So, in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, Maharaj Parikshit asked the question to Sukadev Goswami, that is, what should I do? That is, what should I do? Because what is the purified duty of everyone in all circumstances, and especially for one who is just about to die? So this is the one sense, that is the beginning of Bhagavatam. Means from there, the Bhagavatam is actually building up in terms of answers by Srila Sukadev Goswami. Srila Goswami starts speaking from the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. However, when we hear such a question, and when we think that, okay, this is a question of Maharaj Parikshit, and I have nothing to do with that. He is going to die in 7 days, that's why he is asking such question, but I am going to live forever. So it means we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam in a disconnected fashion. We cannot really identify with the character. We cannot actually get the message of Bhagavatam, because we cannot understand the question first of all. We think this is a question, it is asked by someone to someone, it's a nice question, it's quite interesting. But what I have to do with that? So when we understand, okay, the same question is applicable for me in my life, okay, I am also going to die, and he knows at least it is 7 days, and I don't know when am I going to leave this world. So when we actually see, when we identify with the character, and when we understand the application in our own life, then actually Bhagavatam starts speaking. Then actually Bhagavatam becomes relevant in our life. So the devotees have the tendency, or personally I have the tendency, just to theorize. So just to be an armchair philosopher without tangible practice. So that is a danger. And on the other side, and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sahaja Thakur says, if you even preach and if you don't practice, that is within the purview of karma. It's just a fruitive activity. It's just a karma. We are preaching something and we have no inclination for practice, means just a karmic activity. There's no substance to it. So this is the one sense, even though we have the whole material, we have the whole Bhagavatam, we have the whole Shastra very rightly in front of us, but we had to take use of it. We had to study and we had to apply and we had to preach. So we had to go through that process. Then it becomes enlivened. So in other words, Srimad Bhagavatam can be completely theoretical or it can be completely practical, depending on our consciousness in which we are approaching Srimad Bhagavatam. And on the other side, even for devotees, there could be practices without philosophy. We could practice something, but we don't know what we are doing. Or we could practice Krishna consciousness, some aspects of Krishna consciousness, with some temporary motive, some ulterior motive. So Srila Prabhupada calls such kind of practice as Niyamagraha. So Niyamagraha depends in two. One is, of course, neglecting the rules and regulations. But if one is actually doing any devotional activity just for the sake of following the rules and regulations, then again that is Niyamagraha. So even if you just do devotional service, when you do Arati, when you do Deity worship, when you do service, you think, yeah, otherwise if I don't do, I won't get a place to stay here. I don't want to just get out, you know, outside is miserable, and I don't get a place, I won't get any food here, I won't be recognized among devotees. If you think if that is the mentality, then it's actually Niyamagraha, because that's not the right philosophy, philosophical understanding in which one is performing devotional activity. So we had to check ourselves, what is the real intention behind our activities. So that is very significant for all of us, how we had to rightly take the advantage of the given opportunity to worship the Lord in association of the devotees. In fact, I was hearing from a very senior devotee that few of his colleagues who were worshipping the Lord for many years, they left the movement altogether. And they were doing deity worship practically every day. Like they were doing arati here every day. And this devotee tried to find out why it happened. So he was a very senior. He was trying to talk to them in due course of time. So they said that, those who left, they said that when they were doing arati, they were thinking in their mind, why do I have to do this again and again in front of the Lord? That was the consciousness. So in due course, Krishna gave the opportunity to get out and do whatever they want. So while doing service, we had to be very mindful about our consciousness, and especially while chanting, because chanting is chintamani. So that activity has so much opportunity that if we have unnecessary desires while chanting, that can manifest. So one has to be very careful what kind of desires which are coming to our mind while we are chanting. If it is spiritual, yes, well and good, Krishna can fulfill those desires. But if it is material, yes, that is a process of checking that. Abhyasena cha kauntheya vairagyena cha. So abhyas, practice to focus and to have the right desire, the right mood, and vairagya, and be detached from the unnecessary thoughts, which are actually, we have so much of attachment for that, because we have so much of material attachment, and so it is coming to our mind, and the mind has the tendency to linger in those thoughts. So detachment means, okay, cutting that away and then again focusing on the holy name. So now here it's mentioned, okay, now here the Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like Pandavas. So that is the first line of the purport. So here the whole Bhagavatam is present in front of us, and Srimad Bhagavatam presents the entire philosophy for us. In fact, Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest of the philosophies, because it is explaining Vedanta Sutra, which is the highest of all the literature Srila Vyasadeva has presented. So it is mentioned, Vedanta Paribrahmita. That is, it is giving the whole meaning of all the Vedas in Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the Bhashyam, it is the Arthoyam Brahma Sutranam. It is the gives the whole meaning of the Brahma Sutras, which is the Vedanta Sutras. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest philosophy. But when we speak about the highest philosophy in a mundane sense, it has a very different implication, a different meaning. Many times when you speak about philosophy, it is very boring. Even someone who is interested in philosophy, still, philosophy as such is very dry by nature. Especially about the mundane philosophy, it's very dry by nature. You know, you can just go on and on and on, but, and we get, you know, where is it going? You know, it's a speculation, just going on and on. I was doing a writing course, you know, we had a writing course from back. Then one of the English professors, so he was, you know, explaining about French philosophy. And he was giving an example in some of the philosophical book they have in the French philosophy. It is that one paragraph will go for several pages. One para, usually para means, you know, there is several pages, one paragraph. And at the end one is lost. Or, you know, it is just tedious. It is very dry. So, in comparison to that, Srimad Bhagavatam is in a completely different. Even though this is the highest philosophy, And even though it's completely practical philosophy, still it is very beautiful. It is very beautiful. So we can hear in the Nigama Kalpa Taro Galatam Phalam Shukhamukha Amrata Drava Samyutam Pipada Bhagavatam Prasamalayam Muhiraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha. So it is speaking about the philosophy which has become even more sweeter by the touch of the lips of Shuka there, who is a parrot in the spiritual world. So if you say the ripened fruit of the Vedic literature we call Srimad Bhagavatam, it means there is unripened fruit of Vedic literature also. And what is that? They are the Upanishads. So we can see the dry philosophy to Upanishads, even though it is giving the absolute truth, but we don't have access to that. It becomes very difficult, it becomes very tedious to understand. However, when it comes to Srimad Bhagavatam, it is rasamalayam. It is completely tasteful. Rasika, and the devotees take pleasure in those verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the second verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first chapter, the Dharma Prochita verse, in the last two lines, Srimad Bhagavate Mahapunikrite Kimva Pare Isharaha Sadhyo Hrithi Avaridhade Atra Kritibhi Shushrushibhi Stakshanat. So, it said this beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam, which is written by Srila Vyasadeva in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for self-realization. And what is the need of any other scriptures? One who submissively and attentively listens to Srimad Bhagavatam will have Supreme Personality of Godhead established in the heart. So, see the potency of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is beautiful because it is completely applicable in one's life, and as a result, the all attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead is manifested in one's heart. So, this is the beauty of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, we can see the result. So, it is not just theory. So, we come to the original point, that is the practice of the philosophy. So, when we have the practice of the philosophy, then we get the juice, then we get the result. So we are not on the platform of just relishing completely Srimad Bhagavatam. We may like, we may not like some part of Bhagavatam because of our conditioning. But our duty in the sadhana stage is to read carefully, attentively, with devotion, regularly. So when we study in that fashion, so it is just a matter of time, we will develop taste for Srimad Bhagavatam. We would like to read Srimad Bhagavatam, and we will start thinking about Bhagavatam. We will start thinking about different philosophy and different pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam instead of our mundane thoughts. So when that is in our mind, then it comes the application. So only after mantram and then assimilating the knowledge, then the actual practice comes. Without understanding and without assimilating, we cannot really apply in our life. And another important point about Srimad Bhagavatam is Srimad Bhagavatam, as we know, is the literary incarnation of the Lord. Krishna yasa dhama upagade dharma jnanadipisaha kalau nashtadrisha esha puranarko adhanotitaha. So, as Krishna had departed from this world, so the sages in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam asked, where the dharma has taken shelter of? So then the answer is this verse. They, okay, ultimately, this literary incarnation, Srimad Bhagavatam, is the shelter for Dharma. So we have to approach Srimad Bhagavatam in that way. Just like we approach Krishna, we have to approach Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam gives solution to all the problems of life. Whatever problem we have, we just approach Srimad Bhagavatam. We try to find our solutions based on Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is beyond material satiation. Because any material activity, at one point, it becomes just repetition and it becomes boring. Anything. Any material activity. If you read one book again and again, after some time, I don't want to read it anymore. If you watch a movie, maybe two or three times one could handle after that. Can't. A song, maybe few, maybe 100 times. Maybe after that, can't. So the spiritual life is about repetition. But getting the newer and newer juice in repetition.
We haven't invented any new mantra. We have the same mantra, right? The new mantra is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. We don't have any other mantra. But the same mantra is sufficient. Because it can give us, you know, it can give us just happiness just while chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And we feel it fresh all the time. Otherwise, how could we chant this again and again? So, same about Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. When we read again and again, we develop more appreciation for the scriptures. Bhagavatam, in Bhagavatam itself, there is glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is the beauty of Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto, if you see, when the Bhagavatam gives the glories of Bhagavatam. Tadeva ramyam ruchiram navannavam. It says, Tadeva ramyam ruchiram navannavam. So Bhagavatam can give newer and newer taste. Ruchi. Ruchi means taste. Navannavam. It can give newer and newer taste. So this is the glory of Bhagavatam. So the only thing what we had to do, we had to approach Bhagavatam in the right attitude and get the benefit out of it. So basically, study, application and distribution. Our service to Bhagavatam is study, apply and distribute it. That is our main, you know, that is service to Bhagavatam. So, and in this particular verse, it is giving the Phalashruti of this chapter. What is the result what we are getting by studying this particular chapter? So we can see throughout in Bhagavatam, end of each section or, you know, end of the full pastime, there is a verse or verses giving what do we get by studying this pastime. So here, if we try to see that, it is actually really wonderful what this chapter can give by studying the subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life, back to Godhead, is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. So we have to understand the pastimes of the Lord and His devotees are no different from the Lord. There is no difference. Because we know Krishna is pure. He is pavitram. Especially if we have studied Srisha Upanishad, this two terms are given. Pavitram, Shuddham and Apabavitram. Right, Shuddham is purified, is pure, that he can act as antiseptic, and is apapa vidham, he can act as prophylactic. So because of that is the nature of his purity. And in Nectar of Devotion also, about Krishna it is mentioned, he is pure because whoever come in touch with the Lord becomes pure, and also no one can contaminate his purity. So in these two ways, the Lord is pure. Same way Srimad Bhagavatam is also pure, and he can, by the mercy of Bhagavatam, which is coming through Parampara, can purify. It's pavitra. That phrase is mentioned. Srimad Bhagavatam Purana Mamalam Yat Vaishnavana Priyam. So it is Purana Mamalam, it is a spotless Purana, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quoted. Because it is not mixed with any other fruity mentality of mental speculation or anything. It is completely pure because it can have the whole potency to give Krishna directly. Now, Srimad Bhagavatam is so significant that one may think that, okay, it is only for pure devotees. No, it is applicable for devotees from in all the orders. From basic, pure devotees, for intermediate devotees, and it is equally good for materialistic people. So, it's mentioned, samsarinam karunayaha purana guhyam. Yam Vyasa Sonu Mupayami Gurum Munina. Why? It is a beautiful verse in the first canto. That is, why Bhagavatam was written? Samsarina Karunayaha. He spoke, Shukadeva Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam because of compassion for the materialistic people who are suffering. Tamandha, who are ignorant, they are blind because of ignorance. So, Srila Prabhupada, when he left India to preach in the West, even in his preparation, his lifetime preparation, Srila Prabhupada, initially he had translated Bhagavad Gita, but he wanted his Srimad Bhagavatam to be ready before he left India. He was so clear about that. That is, I should have the Bhagavatam written. So he had the first canto ready in three volumes. By the time he actually left India, and he got it published by that time Chief Minister, I think Lal Bahadur Shastri. Yeah, he actually did the opening of the inauguration of the book. Launching ceremony was done by the Prime Minister of that time. So, he was very determined. He knew exactly what the people need.
And Srila Prabhupada, he used to, after reaching America, even in the beginning months, he used to distribute this copies of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, Srila Prabhupada stressed distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1, the first volume, distribution in the street. Because Prabhupada understood, just by reading that, they get a glimpse of the potency and the authenticity of the scripture. And people get a taste to read the whole thing. So that is Srila Prabhupada stressed 1.1. And also I think there are a few more. I think 1.1 and also first section of second canto. And fifth canto, I think. Fifth or sixth, one of them. I think fifth. I can't remember. Fifth or sixth, one of them. These three cantos, the first few chapters, Srila Prabhupada said, one can distribute in the street. So devotees are actually working. So far, I don't think we distribute second canto or the sixth canto. No, right? I haven't seen any books here. But now the devotees are actually working on getting those books ready. And in future, we will have distribution of those books also on street. But Srila Prabhupada stressed those books as well. So even the samsarina, even the materialistic people, they can actually get benefit and they can become devotees by these books. It's very important. And of course, this is Srimad Bhagavatam is really, really is relishable as we progress in our devotional life. It's not that we should never say, you know, oh yeah, Bhagavatam, I have read the whole Bhagavatam one time. Done. I already read Bhagavatam. That's it. No, the service to Bhagavatam never finishes. In both aspects. In the personality aspect, as a Bhagavat devotee, and also book Bhagavatam. How can it finish? It's an eternal activity. Hearing the glories of the Lord. It's an eternal activity. So, we have to serve Bhagavatam throughout. We should be able to foresee in our life, yeah, I'm reading, I will read Bhagavatam again and again and again. We should have that mission. So we can see senior devotees, you know, who have read Bhagavatam, you know, 25 times, 30 times, you know, I don't know, lost their count. It is very inspiring for all of us to study Bhagavatam and to understand Bhagavatam. So here it is mentioned first, Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees is absolute in itself. Very important point. Both the narration of the personality of Godhead and his devotees, both are absolute. Actually, what the Lord can give, the devotee can also give. A pure devotee can also give. The Lord can award prema. He can award the ultimate perfection of the life, prema, for the Lord. By his mercy, he can award. Similarly, a pure devotee can also bless to give the highest perfection of life. In fact, Bhagavatam says, Mahiyasam Pada Rajokishekam Nishkinchananam Na Vrinita Yavat. That is, one has to smear the whole body by the dust from a pure devotee's lotus feet. Then one can attain perfection. So see, so whatever the Lord can give, the devotee can also give. So this is the absolute platform of devotee also, a pure devotee also. So we need the blessings of the devotees. There is no other way. So that is it's mentioned. And the activities of the devotees, that is also on the absolute plane. So here, this is the pastime of Pandavas, how they retired timely. But this is considered, this is also on the absolute plane. So this has the same potency as hearing Krishna's intimate pastimes. So that reason the blessing is given. Okay, by hearing this, one can get the highest perfection of life. However, there is a very catch to this. We may think, okay, I am hearing this pastime. Many times when I read Bhagavatam or when I hear this kind of verses, I think, yes, I have heard this pastime now, so I don't have to worry. It's a matter of time. Eventually, you know, I'll get it, you know. I'll get perfection. There's a hope that, okay, I will get perfection. That is good. But at the same time, very important point is mentioned here. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith, Shraddhaya, with devotional faith, that is very important. Because without that, one cannot actually get the ultimate result. So, studying Bhagavatam means one has to study with devotion. So, one could think, what is actually devotion?
So Srila Prabhupada said, okay, when he translated bhakti, he translated bhakti as loving devotional service. So there is love, there is devotion, and there is service. So many times, not in our community, not in our ISKCON, but many other people, when they even they study Bhagavatam, they forget one term completely, that is service. Really, they forget service completely. And in fact, there are thousands of Bhagavatam speakers who forget this term service, if you believe it or not. Not in our ISKCON movement, but outside. And I have seen them. And in fact, I have heard from them too. Very dangerous. But it is fact. They just speak. They don't worry studying any commentaries, and they speculate based on that. The whole idea is to speak nicely and interestingly. And such kind of presentations are very interesting for the ears, but there is no change of heart whatsoever. So that is very, very dangerous. Thousands of people go and listen to such lectures, but no use. So it's mentioned in this verse is from Puranas, quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is, Lord Shiva is saying, you know, what is that? Aham veti, shuko veti, vyaso veti, na veti va, bhaktya bhagavatam grahyam, na buddhya, na thikaya. So Lord Shiva is saying, I may know the actual meaning of Bhagavatam. Vyasadev may know or may not know the real meaning of Bhagavatam. But Shukadev Goswami, he knows the meaning of Bhagavatam. However, one should study Bhagavatam with devotion. Not just by an imaginary commentary or just with intelligence. Because we have the tendency, because we have intelligence, some kind of intelligence, material intelligence, and just analyze Bhagavatam based on just material logic. And it will be a failure. And that what happens to Indologists. There are many Indologists, they study about the various scriptures more thoroughly than devotees do many times. It's a fact. Many thoroughly than devotees do. There are people who have studied all the Puranas, all the verses of all the Puranas, those who have translated entire Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, in hundreds of thousands of verses, but they miss the essence. My friend, here in La Trobe University, there's a department dedicated to translate many of the scriptures. So they were on a mega project translating Mahabharata. And one of our devotee friend, he went up to that professor and had a chat. He said, you know, I'm from India, you know, we follow this, you know, explained about Bhagavatam. So he said, he says openly that it's just imaginary, you know. The whole thing is imaginary. No faith whatsoever. They're studying, really they're studying. The entire scripture they're studying, but without any devotion. There is no service, there is no faith. And the result is also nothing. So this is the situation. So one should know, because there are apparent contradictions to our material logic. When you hear Vrindavan, we know the area, how big is Vrindavan? In 80 square miles? Something like that, is it? Correct. Accessible Vrindavan, materially. Something like that. And when the scriptures say there were billions of gopis there, then the scholars say, look, this is imagination. When there is a description about Dwaraka, where are, you know, so many palaces and so many yojanas, each the length and the width and everything, and they do a material calculation and they say this is imaginary. And I had a friend, he was a researcher in the university, and he was into all these kind of things. He was just generally as a scholarly level studying different scriptures. And he studied Bhagavad Gita, and his conclusion is like this. How can Krishna is speaking to Arjun, so how can the entire battle stop because of this one conversation? And he's calculating. His calculation is such that he calculated the entire number of Akshohanis, how many people were there, and how much space it would take to cover the area. This is how they study. And okay, the both sides, okay, this much area is covered. And if one person speaks in the middle, how could one hear? And you know, what is the visibility from one end to the other end? This is the material vision. Actually, they study like this. And at the end, they say, no, you know, this is not reality. This is mythology. So that's the reason when we hear this verse, you know, Bhaktiya Bhagavatam Grahim, it makes a lot of sense. We are trying to develop some appreciation for Bhagavatam because there is a pure devotee who has written a commentary
with complete devotion. And we are trying to engage in the service of Bhagavatam in both aspects, by studying as well as we are trying to serve pure devotees. So that's the only reason we are trying to have some interest in understanding and applying Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, my Guru Maharaj makes a statement. He says one should read Srimad Bhagavatam in the fire of devotion, devotional service, in the fire of devotional service. So this is the way to approach Bhagavatam. If you are nicely engaged in devotional service and then if you approach Bhagavatam, then it goes hand in hand. We actually make further progress. Then we actually get the result. So it is mentioned. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. So with that hearing, one can actually get the highest perfection of life, which is pure devotional service unto the Lord. So with this, I stop and see if there are any questions, comments or corrections. Yes,
Govinda Prabhu, you told about mantra. Mantra and tantra. Mantra, of course, control of mind. And we know Hare Krishna mantra. It can give you prema pamato maha. Ultimate goal of life. What is tantra? You want to tell us something about tantra and what is
it? I don't know much about it. Tantra literally means rituals? Or, yes, just rituals. Rituals.
What for?
It can be for actually, it can be for any purpose. But generally, when we say tantrics, it has a different connotation. When we say tantrics, they do kind of rituals for controlling others or, you know, for some ulterior material purposes. Generally, tantric. When we say tantric, but tantra in itself just means rituals. Is it right? Or you want to comment? Is that fine, Prabhu?
Yeah.
Anything else? Yes, Prabhu?
Prabhu was mentioning that you're standing in the forest and coming to mind. And if you're not able to control the thoughts, you're just like doing karma, chanting and karma. So, in some ways, we can actually avoid the bad and other tasks while we are chanting.
So it's a complete process. It's not just a matter of 2 hours when we are chanting. We had to engage in devotional service with the right consciousness. We had to study shastra and hear. And then while chanting, we had to practice both the practice and detachment. If we have bad thoughts, we should cut it and focus again on the holy name. Because we are conditioned, so bad thoughts can come. You had to neglect and chant and practice this. So. You can see it reduces, at least in yearly terms, some reduction we should see. May not be able to see in a daily basis, but as time progresses, a few years passes, there has to be some reduction in those kind of thoughts. Okay. Any further? Yes, ma'am. Sorry, I didn't hear that. Oh yeah. Yes. So, okay, on one side, of course, whatever service done to Krishna, there is an eternal benefit. And there is no loss of diminution in this path. Neha bikamana shasti patevayana vidyate, of course, that is one side of it. On the other side, if one has an intense material desire to leave Krishna, then Krishna has to sanction. Otherwise, why are we in the material world? We were with Krishna. So, because of that independence, someone has an intense desire not to serve Krishna, then Krishna will fulfill that. Mata smriti jnanam apohanam cha. So Krishna has to give forgetfulness if that's what the devotee wishes at one point. Yeah, Krishna awards that. If one is like a story of one person who was doing kind of a full-time service in one temple in India. And he wanted to enjoy materially. He wanted to practically do some nonsense. And he, as a devotee, he can't do that. And he was just, he just wanted to do that. So he started. He was kind of in a prayerful mood to the Lord. I just want to do some, abominable activity, but I can't do it because I'm a devotee. Having all the understanding, how can you do that? So this person kept going with this thought. It's not just thought. He wanted to really do it. Then one day he was cleaning a fan, his head hit on the fan and he became unconscious. And after that he became kind of not normal and he left the temple. He became abnormal mentally and he left the temple and he did whatever he wanted to. Then one day he was sitting on the bank of Krishna River and he saw one monkey coming. So he was just sitting, he was not practicing anything. He saw a monkey coming and the monkey jumped into the Krishna River, took bath and paid respects. And when he saw that, he got the memory back. He actually got, I was a devotee, I was doing all this thing, why, what am I doing now? I'm doing all these junk things, I should get back. So he continued practicing devotional service. So Krishna, that's the point of time, Krishna can again show the mercy. Then again the independence is there, it's up to the devotee to take back. I think it's a beautiful verse in the first canto also telling this in the fifth chapter. Can you remember that? The last line of it? Dasagya or something. Yeah. Last line is there. Smaran, last two lines. Smaran Mugundanki. Vikadam Ichena Rasagrahojana. So the ninth verse it says, one who has, the Lord, one who has actually left Krishna consciousness, one who does not actually practice, for his, even one who has actually practiced and fallen down due to some reason, his activities are not just not exactly a karmic activity as any other ordinary person. Because even though he has left, still Krishna's hand is there. So it is a kind of a punishment for such a person. So he says, ultimately, he said rasagraha, he has actually tasted Krishna service. So at one point he will think, okay, there is nothing better than this. So when he gets enough beating, which is the punishment of the Lord, then he can actually come back. So Krishna actually looks after. So even one leaves and still in Maya, still it is a kind of a punishment of the Lord. So the Lord certainly gives mercy. But we shouldn't take this as an opportunity. We should be very serious. We should think, we don't know if we leave how long would we actually waste our time? Is it years or lifetimes or we don't know anything? So we try to be serious as much as we can. Yeah. Is that clear? Anything further? Okay, thank you very much. Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Samveda Bhaktavrinda ki jai.